Welcome to the Clemson Dubcast, Friday, November 2nd, 2018. Preparing for Louisville to enter Death Valley tomorrow, on Saturday. Kind of an eerie feeling around town, around campus. Went down to lunch on Thursday over at Loose Change. Normally, it's a really busy time. Downtown is jam-packed on a, you know, on a Thursday of a home weekend. It was like a ghost town. It seems like with fall break coming up, students off Monday and Tuesday, quite a few of them took off early. Maybe they're coming back, not sure. But feels almost like an open date with a 40-point underdog. Still really can't process that fully. That Louisville put up almost 40 in Death Valley 2 years ago, and now they are almost a 40-point underdog. Crazy. Got some fresh video review, our weekly video review segment. Highly popular on TigerIllustrated.com. Posted Thursday afternoon. Took a look at some of the key elements from that destruction, utter destruction, last Saturday in Tallahassee. Also took a look at 2-6 Louisville and what has made this season such an implosion for a Cardinals program that was so recently so formidable. Also, of course, plenty of excellent recruiting coverage from the maestro, Paul Strelo, or Pauly Streets, as he prefers to go by. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals. Went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581, or parhamlaw.com. Also sponsoring the podcast is the Abernathy Boutique Hotel, right down about a block or two from the stadium. Great location. All the ESPN folks who are in Clemson at various points throughout the year, they stay there and they absolutely love it just because it's so convenient, so nice with all sorts of amenities, including the Taps Bar and Cafe. They also have a tailgate outside before home games and grilling out hot dogs, hamburgers, got a DJ, got multiple bars outside. They're partnering with Jack Daniels for those events. So a lot of cool stuff over at the Abernathy. Got a lot of good beers on tap inside at Taps Bar and Cafe. My favorite is the Hugie Street IPA. So go on over there and give them a look. Check them out right across from Lower Lot 2 or on the internets at the Abernathy. Okay, this is the moment I've been waiting for more than a year. It is time to settle an old score and teach those punks up in Louisville at the ESPN Louisville radio station a lesson. Never to mess with me again. That I'm never wrong. No, just kidding. Long story short, a year ago before the Louisville game, I went on a Louisville radio station and was complimentary of Bobby Petrino, Lamar Jackson, but just the main point was I didn't see the supporting cast around Lamar Jackson, nor the defense to the level that I thought that basically said Louisville presented a much bigger challenge in 2016 in Death Valley than they were going to in Louisville. And the radio hosts, after we hung up, were not happy about it and trashed me. And then it started kind of a bit of a spat on Twitter and other social media between not just yours truly and those hosts, but also a bunch of Clemson fans who I appreciate y'all rallying to my defense during that time. You know, it's really funny, though, now looking back. It's really an example of how heated debate in the moment is really serious and tensions and sensitivities are high. But when you have distance from those debates, it really is just kind of silly in hindsight. And in this case, kind of funny. And I think I speak for both sides. I reached out to Nick Birch, who was the main combatant a year ago, and he was very cordial and willing to come on the Dubcast. He was fully willing to own it, to eat some crow, but that really wasn't the point of asking him on. It was really to get his take on what in the world is going on up there with that football program. So, fun conversation. Hope y'all enjoy. All right, here we are joined by Nick Birch of... I want to make sure I'm getting this right, Nick. You are both a radio host and a writer for the ESPN Louisville radio station.
You got it. That is correct.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, thank you for joining us, and thank you for, I guess, your trust that I'm not going to sit here and ambush you and act like a seventh grader. So
no,
appreciate
feel
it.
Free.
All right. So the first thing we need to do is a little, I guess, some housekeeping in terms of looking back a year and a little refresher. And we were just talking off the air. It's just hilarious. Like, I think it's an example of how arguments are always so much more serious in the moment.
Absolutely.
And then when you look back at them, whether it's a couple of months later, or in this case, more than a year later, it's just more funny than anything. Does that speak for you as well?
Absolutely. No, and it's you hit it right on the nail on the head there.
Okay, so here's the play-by-play of what happened. I was asked to come on y'all's show. I believe it was a Wednesday evening before Clemson's game at Louisville.
That's correct.
And it was right before Clemson finished up practice. And what I recall is saying, you know, I thought the world of Lamar Jackson, voted him for the Heisman in 2016.
Right.
Thought the world of Bobby Petrino as a schemer. But just from my point of view, just from the outside looking in, you know, having watched them in their games to date as of last season, at that point, that they just did not have they definitely didn't have the defense that they had the year before. After losing quite a few talented players, and then on the offensive side of the ball, I just didn't see the supporting cast. And so, anyway, the conversation went really well on the air, and then I think it was the next morning when I woke up at like 5:30 or something. I had a notification from a direct message from somebody in Louisville, another media person, who said, "Man, what did you do to those guys?" and so I go and listen to the show, and after we hung up, it was, "Man, that guy's crazy. He didn't know what the heck he's talking about. The FCC doesn't allow what I really want to say." And so anyway, what's your side of how that went?
No, I'll give it. It was that's pretty much right on the head. And a lot of people, I have a sense of humor that comes across that can come across if you don't know me as maybe a little bit insulting. So that's definitely my fault. But so what got me when you initially got off the phone is I was thinking, what the blank in my head, which would not have been allowed by the FCC. But I didn't want to say, because I kept thinking, I was like, well, I want to say something back, but I'm going to come off as really rude. And this guy's on our show, and I don't want to come off because he doesn't know me. He doesn't know my sense of humor. So I said, so in my opinion, I thought Louisville's offensive talent actually at the time, I thought it surpassed as far as the supporting cast goes, what they had the previous season, because you mentioned guys like Cole Hikutimi and James Quick, both of you were very valuable contributors, but both were wildly inconsistent throughout their careers. They both showed up against Clemson, but that wasn't always the case in every game. And I was very high on some of the receivers like Des Fitzpatrick and Jordan Davis, who is a transfer tight end that has sit out, and Malik Williams, who had really come along as a big Bobby Petrino type of running back, who really had a good game against North Carolina the week before. So that was my take. And then that turned out to blow up in my face, because after the first two games, those guys were never to be heard from again. So Dez is still a very valuable contributor on offense, very good possession wide receiver. But you were right in terms that the offensive production went significantly down. And it wasn't necessarily a supporting cast thing as much as it was. They had to do so much more due to the defense being just completely inept.
Yeah.
And that was the change in defensive coordinators. Defensive coordinator Todd Grantham picked up his bag and headed to Mississippi State for a year. But he's now in Florida with Dan Mullen, of course. And Peter Sermon came in and was just a disaster. Brian Van Gorder has taken over since then and has done maybe a slight bit better, but nothing to write home about. So initially, and I also thought Louisville was going to have more of a chance against Clemson than the butt kicking that they received due to my drastic underestimation of Kelly Bryant. I did not think he could hold a candle to Deshaun Watson. I thought Deshaun Watson was by far the best passer in college football the previous year. Just, and obviously he's shown what he can do with the Texans now too. And I was like, there's no way. Kelly Bryant, he's just going to be a holdover for Trevor Lawrence. He's not going to do anything against Louisville. And of course, lo and behold, I don't remember what the final score of that game was. I think it was like 41-21 or something, but it had more of a feel of a 56-3 type of game. So anyway, that's the long story short, the long story of it. I took my medicine, definitely took a slice of humble pie. And since then, Louisville has just gotten worse after that. So karma may have struck me a little hard.
And so just some background here for, you know, most of my listeners probably aren't monitoring, you know, what you have been saying about Louisville and Bobby Petrino lately, but I mean, you're all over them. You're off the bandwagon for sure. I'm wondering your evolution. At what point did you start to think this guy might not be?
It's interesting you say that, because in October of 2016, I was right on the cusp of the classic clash between Louisville and Clemson at Clemson, when James Quick got cut down at the on fourth down. Clemson wins the game, but both teams come out looking very good. Both look like playoff contenders at that moment. So at that point, it was nothing but blue skies ahead for Louisville. It's going to be a great career. No shame in losing to Clemson at Clemson. And I started to kind of feel a little uneasy the week after that. 2 weeks after that, they came off the bye and played Duke, who was supposed to be, I think they were at that time, a 17-point underdog, something like that. And Louisville got flat-out lucky. Daniel Jones threw an interception at the end of the game when they were driving, and the way the defense had been playing that game, it was very possible that they were going to go down to score and win that game. So that was when I was like, started to kind of falter a little bit, but hey, it's one game, right? A little bit of a hangover from the Clemson game, no big deal. Well, the rest of that season, outside of two games, which were against NC State at home and at Boston College, Louisville was very, very iffy. They just didn't have that same drive. They didn't have the same fight, the same attitude that they had during the Clemson game prior to that. So I started kind of wondering, well, maybe it's just that hangover is a really long hangover. I don't know. And then the last three games were just a flat-out disaster. You get just absolutely trounced at Houston. You'll lose a game you absolutely had no business losing versus Kentucky. It was a 28-point underdog. The play calling became more suspect as the season went along. It seemed that more teams were scheming for Lamar Jackson. He was no longer a secret, and the adjustments just weren't coming. And, of course, there was the LSU fiasco in which Lamar was basically a tackling dummy. And then you fast forward a year, you say, okay, you know, what happened? What is in the past? They're going to bounce back. They still got Lamar. They still got Dez. And then that first game, you just get the sense that they weren't ready. It was Purdue. They were not supposed to be in even close to coming close to Louisville that game. And Louisville got lucky. I mean, they very well could have lost that game. And that's when you started kind of thinking, ugh. But the offense still looked good. They looked good again the next week against North Carolina. So initially, the more optimistic side of me was saying, hey, Purdue's just better than we thought. North Carolina's better than we thought. It's okay. And then came Clemson, who just absolutely hit a rock bottom on Louisville. When it was supposed to be another classic. You fast forward a couple weeks from there, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And there was a time last season when it looked like Louisville was not going to go bowling. And they snuck by Florida State in Tallahassee, and they did finish the season quite strong, in large part due to the return of Jair Alexander, who was all-conference DB and excellent talent. And you look at what Louisville had in Lamar Jackson and Jair Alexander, and it's a wonder that they could only get 17 wins with those two. And then you go to this season, and it just all comes full circle. You realize how much Lamar Jackson and Jair Alexander were of that team. And then you kind of start thinking, like, you start looking deeper into the situation. Okay, what is going on? Like, you give the guy a mulligan year after year, and there was this faltering that started after the Clemson loss. The wheels just slowly started to come off. And then when Lamar and Jair took their talents to the next level, the car just completely crashed. And it's showing this season. And there are a lot of people out there that would suggest, you know, it's not Bobby, it's his staff. He just needs a better staff. And I can tell you right now, that's a very good thought. I do think an improved staff would benefit him entirely. However, talking to people around the program, around college football, it's very clear. There's no gray area about it. Nobody wants to work for the guy. There's a reason he's stuck with the staff that he currently has. He's had to replace 8 assistants in the 5 years that he's been there. And those who he replaced them with are not exactly upgrades. With arguably Mike Summers over Chris Klonakis and possibly Brian Van Gorder over Peter Sermon. But the initial staff that featured guys like Todd Grantham, Tony Grantham, Greg Brown from Alabama, Garrett McGee was the offensive coordinator, Terrell Buckley was the DB's coach. They just had a much more complete staff. And then they just kept going. And you talked to certain guys that, I mean, I'm not going to say any names, but I have talked to people that are both former coaches and friends of coaches that have told me the guy just isn't fun to work for. And if you're not winning games, you're not at a big program, it's going to be hard to do that. So, and then you look at it this way too. So that hurts. And then you look at the apathetic way in which he handles his public relations portion of the job. He's not doing a great service when he just repeats the same generic excuses week after week. Nothing is changing. The offensive line has regressed. The wide receivers the wide receivers are the one group I think that have improved throughout the year. Earlier in the season, I mean, it was drop passes left and right. They have gotten better. But I do think that Bobby is still having an identity crisis with this team. And he went out there preseason and said, this team can beat Alabama. Fast forward 8 weeks later or 9 weeks later, and they're looking at a very concrete 2-10. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that his handling of the quarterback position has been just awful. Juwan Pass has been in the system since his third year in the system, was an Army All-American coming out of high school, was actually more highly touted than Lamar Jackson. but he is just wildly inconsistent. He lacks confidence. He just doesn't know how to go through the reads at the rate in which you need to go through them at the Power 5 level. He has a very inaccurate deep ball, and none of the quarterbacks seem to be the answer. Bobby's tried to go to the back to the read option with backup Malik Cunningham, but while he's Lamar-esque, he's not even close to being the athlete that Lamar was, which few are. He's tried to dabble with Jordan Travis, a true freshman, still very raw, great arm, but he's just not there yet. So he keeps juggling the quarterbacks, doesn't have an answer, and it's just very apparent that the success over the past 3 years, looking at the season, when there was success, could be more so attributed to the unbelievable talents of Lamar Jackson than the coaching acumen of Bobby Petrino. And there's just not a whole lot of light at the end of the tunnel right now, because recruiting has really flatlined. Louisville lost two key recruiters the past year. And Court Dennison, safeties coach, who went to Oregon. And Stephen Field, who is kind of an off the field and more of an administrator role, but he was a key recruiter as well, had a lot of ties to the Florida area. So both of them are in Oregon now. And the local kids, this is a very talented class for the state of Kentucky, and especially the city of Louisville. There's, I think, four kids that are at least four-star prospects, and at least one site considered four-star prospects. So far, none of them are considering Louisville very seriously, and that's not a good look. When you're the school in the city and they're not even really looking your direction, it's not good. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better down south in Florida and Georgia. Right now, I think the recruiting class is ranked somewhere around 60th in the country. That's not going to cut it. And without a key recruiting staff, it's very hard to overcome that. So I think a lot of fans now are starting to realize this and see the continuous errors that are made each game. I mean, against Wake Forest, the first play of the second half was a defensive offsides on Louisville's defensive line in an absolute inexcusable situation. And it just got worse from there. So when you look at it, I think that a lot of people are wanting to give him the boot now, despite his big buyout, due to the fact that up north, a Louisville alum and hometown hero, Jeff Brohm, is having a lot of success at Ohio State. At Purdue, especially having them beat Ohio State. And you look at it and think, okay, this guy has a team that fights for him, that's hungry, that is getting hyped up for these games. He's creative on offense. He's not predictable. He's still got a lot of fire in him. He's from here. Let's go after him. Now, if he wasn't from Louisville and had the ties here, would he be as realistic of an option? I don't think so. Probably not. But being that he does have those ties here and he is a hot name in college football right now, it's kind of one of those things you want to strike the iron while it's hot. So I think at the end of the season, it's very possible that they are going to try to find a way to make the money work and get him back down to Louisville. How realistic is that? Depends on who you talk to. I've talked to some people that said he's very happy at Purdue. I've talked to others that said he'd crawl back to Louisville. It's an interesting situation, but I think it's definitely a long stretch from 2 years ago when Louisville and Clemson were both in the college playoff hunt. Now Clemson's sitting number two in the CFP rankings while Louisville is not making any vacation plans in December. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, 2 years ago, Louisville opens at number seven in the CFP poll. Mm-hmm. They go up to number five. And actually, when they were number seven, Petrino was not happy with that. He said, maybe I should have kept my starters in. We should have put up 80 against Florida State.
I remember.
Question for you. And tell me if I'm wrong here, if I'm misremembering. But during the Tennessee head coaching search that ended up with Jeremy Pruitt after a circus, I want to say I recall a sports writer, maybe some national writer, maybe a Knoxville writer, doing a Freedom of Information request and finding that Petrino had reached out to Tennessee, or his agent or something had reached out saying he might be interested.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of truth there was to that. It wouldn't have shocked me either way. I think once it became that, I remember him being kind of tied to that a little bit. And one guy who really was pummeled at the time was Clay Travis, who's obviously a big voice down in Knoxville area, which I think that carried a little bit of weight. So people started talking, but Bobby shut it down pretty quick, saying he's not going anywhere, he's staying. But in hindsight, I think most fans in Louisville wouldn't have been too upset. And I do know that had they not really mishandled that situation, I think there's a good chance that Jeff Braum would have been wearing orange this year, which Louisville fans are thankful that he's not.
I guess my question would be, is Petrino ready to get out of there? Is he kind of mailing it in?
It's an interesting situation, and it does. I mean, and one thing, and this is, you know, me feeling for the guy. He did lose his dad before the season, who was his mentor, his confidant, his go-to guy, and anybody that's close with their fathers can understand how impactful that loss can be. And it does seem that he just doesn't have the same fire that he once did. He's kind of just, when he's doing his press conference, it almost seems like he's as interested in talking about the football game as he is talking about what to do in his sock drawer, how he organizes his laundry. he just doesn't seem like he's all there. And you look at it, there were times when, I don't know, 2005, let's say, Louisville would be down 17-10. And him and his staff would be going up and down the sidelines, just trying to rally the troops, getting in their faces, and there was no smiles. If Louisville was losing in those days, there were no smiles. There was no guys dancing on the sidewalk. They were huddling up, getting each other rallied up, and doing what they could to, if not win, get back in the game. Today, you see guys. I think the score was 35-14 Wake at the time. And you look on the sidelines and there are guys just joking around, just not looking at the field. And it's just not something you generally see with Petrino's old teams. So I think people are just, does he really want to be here? And you got to think too, Tom Jurich, the guy that brought him back, the guy that brought him the first time, is no longer in charge. That was his closest ally. And one has to think, does he really want to work for the guy that he's currently working for? And obviously they can't say anything publicly how they feel about one another other than, you know, put on the buddy show. It's, you know, you gotta think. I mean, was he more comfortable with Tom? Is he not so comfortable with the new guy, Vince Towery? It's debatable. So you gotta think if Louisville wants him gone, I don't think he's gonna be dragged out kicking and screaming. I think he's gonna discuss it, maybe take a settlement, maybe look at other jobs, if that's the case. But if there's gonna be a change next season, I don't see a whole lot of restraint from either side in getting it done.
I mean, it feels almost a little like Jimbo Fisher and FSU, kind of like just a bad marriage. Both sides are kind of ready for it to end.
Yeah, and I kind of said this in analogy too. I mean, Petrino and Louisville, I mean, they kind of when he was initially brought back in 2014 to replace Charlie Strong, I mean, he inherited a lot of good players, very good situation. Charlie had won, I think, 22 games previous two seasons. And so there's a lot of upside, you know, we're in the ACC now, a lot of hype, a lot of fun. And at that time, you know, the guy that brought Louisville and Petrino together was Tom Jurich. And a lot of reasons that Louisville fans who were on the fence accepted him is because they trusted Jurich and what he could do to build a program to maintain success. It doesn't take a whole lot of research to know Petrino's history prior to taking the job back at Louisville. He had the fiasco at Arkansas. He tried to leave Louisville every time there was a job opening from 2003 to 2006. So fans were a little bit wary taking him back. But if Tom trusted him and they put a big buyout in there to make sure that he didn't leave, I think that they were okay. But now that Tom's gone, and Petrino is just not doing what he was expected to do, it feels a lot like an old married couple whose kids moved off to college and they're sitting there in bitter resentment from one another across the dinner table with just nothing to say. And they both went out, but they can't figure out a way. So, and I think that's kind of the situation, is I don't think either party is happy with the situation. It just seems that way. I may be overstating, but it definitely seems that a change is imminent.
Business owners out there, if you own a business that accepts credit cards, you need to listen up. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, run by Clemson folks, is changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program saves you up to 90% on processing charges and gives your customers what they love most, choices. This is not some crazy introductory offer. Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. If you want to know more, visit TandemPayment.com today. Former Tiger Hot Rod McDowell works over there at Tandem Payment. They handle all their business and customer service face-to-face. So give them a call, 864-672-1570, if you're tired of spending an arm and a leg on all those credit card processing fees. Yesterday, I wrote a column about back in 2014 when Petrino went to Louisville. Clemson was successful at the time, but they were a galaxy away from where they are right now.
Right.
They had lost five. Yeah, they had lost five straight to,
Chad
to South
Kelly
Carolina.
Was still on the team.
And so, I mean, Clemson fans were happy with Dabo, but when you're at Clemson and you see Petrino take over at Louisville, you think, okay, this guy is going to be a legitimate threat, and nobody, I don't think, at the time would have foreseen Dabo winning five straight over Petrino. And yes, I'm going ahead and chalking up the game Saturday as a Clemson
win. You can go ahead. I'll allow it.
What was just sort of to get some perspective from the Louisville end? What was the view of Clemson at the time from the Louisville side? What did you think? Did you foresee Petrino maybe getting the better of Dabo and Clemson during that time?
Well, I thought it was going to be a challenge. At that time, I thought Florida State was the class of the ACC. Obviously, it has come off a national championship with Jameis Winston. Of course, it's funny how things go, right? And now they are right there with Louisville. But when Louisville initially joined the ACC, I saw Clemson as a legitimate elite program that had room to grow. I didn't put them in the same class as Florida State, Alabama, Georgia, the schools that you would typically see in that top four, the BCS polls. But I did think that they were a consistent top 15, 20 team that was going to challenge Louisville. And if Louisville could handle them, it would be a great win each season. I never really envisioned that they would take off like they have, though. Not only are they beyond elite now, I mean, they're in a class of their own. I mean, it's Alabama and Clemson and everybody else in college football. Sure, you can throw Notre Dame and LSU, but I don't think either of them hold a candle to those two teams. I think just by getting a guy like, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's Clemson and guys with last names of Lawrence, but y'all do pretty good there. And you see the recruiting. I mean, Dabo is just an unreal recruiter. I think it was a couple of years back. Maybe it was last year. I'm not sure. I think he had like the top three kids in the 20-whatever class all committed to Clemson. You got Trevor Lawrence. And in the past, you got guys like Dexter Lawrence. You got Deshaun Watson. I mean, you start seeing these five stars start rolling in for Clemson, and it's like, Bobby, you might want to start trying to keep up with that. Now, granted, Louisville doesn't have the best recruiting geography. Kentucky is hit and miss with their talent. Usually, the kids that aren't in the city of Louisville are going to opt to go to UK, just because that's what they were raised on. And Florida, I mean, obviously, you're going to have to recruit. I'll recruit not only Florida State and Florida now, but Central Florida is a good program. South Florida's got a role with Charlie Strong. That makes it more difficult. Georgia, obviously, it's going to be tough to get the elite talent away from Kirby Smart. Same with Alabama and Nick Saban. I mean, it's just so you're kind of on the outside looking in with the elite recruits. So you got to get what you can. It used to be not that big of an issue for Petrino because he's put a lot of guys in the NFL that were not considered not considered five-star prospects. Looking historically to see guys like Harry Douglas, Elvis Dumervil, guys like that just were not considered elite recruits who turned into very good NFL players. And Moby Okoye, another guy, was a very lowly thought of recruit at the time because he was so young. But he ended up being a top 10 pick. Now he had injuries that derailed his career. But so that's the type of guy you thought you were getting with Petrino, that, hey, recruiting isn't going to matter that much because he's such a good developer of players. But you're just not seeing it anymore. And that's what I think a lot of fans are fed up with. Like, if Louisville was out there trouncing teams with these forgotten players or the overlooked players, then people wouldn't mind so much. But they're not recruiting. They're not winning. The head coach doesn't seem all that interested. So fans are fired up.
Is the feeling looking back that he took too many chances on transfers, kids with checkered past, JUCO guys, you know, sort of a model that doesn't really lend itself to building a program?
I think it's a possibility. And I also think that a lot of those chances he took were because he was not having the success that he wanted with the top high school prospects he was going after. You look at a guy like Jeremy Smith, who's currently on the roster, although he's very lightly used. At that time, Louisville was really in good with a couple of four-star high school running backs and ended up going to Notre Dame and Auburn, so that didn't work out. And you look at guys that did kind of hinder some development of other guys. Devontae Fields was a good player, but he had a lot of baggage that came with him, and I don't know if his play on the field really did enough to offset that. I know it was very controversial, him even joining the team. Then you look at guys like Josh Harvey Clemens and Shaq Wiggins. Harvey Clemens was a quality player, but he had his issues. Shaq Wiggins never really got to that next level, was more of a rotational player. And I do think having those guys did hinder the secondary recruitment a little bit of some guys, because after them, they were throwing in freshmen, DBs that have never seen a college snap, that weren't that highly thought of, along with these converted wide receivers. So I do think it hurt recruiting a little bit, but I also don't think he had much choice in the matter. He wasn't having the success that he wanted to, so he had to take who he could get.
2 years ago, Louisville scored 36 in Death Valley. Now they are underdogs by 37. Do you ever wonder, if Quick doesn't get out of get forced out of bounds, score there, what might have been different?
All the time. And that was such an iconic, game-changing, program-altering play for Louisville. And I know it sounds like I'm overstating it, but when they lost that game, it was almost as if all the confidence in the world was sucked out of them. Because they were talked about. I mean, you remember weeks before that, Lamar Jackson on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They're the talk of college football. They're already talking about, where Bobby Petrino is going to go next. And then you lose that game to Clemson in such heartbreaking fashion. And it definitely changes, because the whole year, Petrino had put in them this mindset that they're a national championship contending team. And having that taken away from them, I do think derailed the season. And I just think that when the Charlie Strong era players left, a lot of leadership left with them. I haven't really seen the guys. I mean, the guys that were there that had still experienced the Strong staff were very vocal, were very in your face, were very driven, who wanted to. They had experienced a culture of winning football and knew how to handle it. I think the younger guys never really had that and just kind of looked to the older guys. Now that they're gone, they're feeling the pressure, and the winning culture that they had experienced was a byproduct of the older guys. And when this national championship flavor left their mouth, they didn't know how to handle it. So I think that's a big problem with Louisville right now, is they lack on the field leadership. And it doesn't hurt that their defensive captain is out for the season, but got hurt in the Alabama game. But I think that's kind of a cop out when you try to put the limitations of one unit on one player. It just doesn't make sense to me. But it does. There's definitely that culture that Charlie Strong left is definitely long gone now.
The thing is, when we're looking back 2 years to the fallout from that loss in Clemson, you know, they win five games in a row. And during that winning streak, I mean, you had a drumbeat from a number of national media folks during that time. And the only reason I remember is because it drove Clemson fans crazy. People were saying, hey, Louisville is better than Clemson, yeah, regardless of what happened on the field that day. I still think they're better.
Oh, they were saying, yeah, home game of Louisville wins, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, just Lamar ends up winning the Heisman, you know, over Deshaun Watson. So it's not as though they weren't still where they needed to be, you know, until that meltdown at Houston.
Yeah, and I guess that was an eye-opener.
I guess it was just sort of the house of cards, so to speak, was built on a flimsy foundation from the beginning, maybe?
I think that's a very good way to put it. If you don't look at the Florida State beatdown, which is huge for Louisville's national spotlight, and the close loss at Clemson, you take those two games away, you see a pretty an above-average team at best with an elite superstar in Lamar Jackson. I think those two games, if you take away, then Deshaun Watson runs away with the Heisman. But I do think that it may have inflated the view of Louisville in a way that also inflated some egos on that team. And it just came crashing down on them. Like you said, the house of cards was not strong enough to withhold the after effect of the Clemson loss.
You mentioned the 17-9 record with Lamar and Jaire Alexander. Some other unflattering records under Petrino, from 14-17, not counting this year. Petrino was 1-11 against teams that that finished ranked, and that's going to be about 1-15 at this rate because they got some ranked teams this year. Also, only 12 of his wins. The whole time he's been there, the whole time he's been there, this second stint, 12 wins over teams that finished with winning records.
Yeah, it's not great. And that's, you know, so you got to think about it in that sense too. Some of these wins are coming against opponents who don't exactly share the same acumen as a team like Clemson or Florida State or even a team like North Carolina State, and that definitely stands out on the stat sheet. And when Louisville initially joined the ACC, given the recent success that they had, Louisville fans expected them to compete with Clemson and Florida State in the Atlantic Division. Instead, what we've seen is Clemson and Florida State put them in the rearview mirror for the most part. Louisville has had some success with Florida State, so maybe that's unfair to say that, but they've also seen the likes of Boston College, Wake Forest, and NC State passed them up. And that's not good. That's not what anybody expected. And Boston College is on the up and up. Yes, but Wake Forest is not a great team this year. And they made, and Louisville made them look like there's going to be guys getting undrafted free agent contracts because of that game alone. and so that's just not the direction Louisville fans thought Louisville would be in at this point. So again, just circling back to it, a change is going to have to be imminent. I know that Vince Tyra, the new athletic director, is very confident that the situation will be fixed. He is a financial guy, so he knows how to handle the money. And I do think in December, when Louisville misses bowl season for the first time since 2009, almost a full decade, that there is going to be a new guy introduced as Louisville's head coach. It may not be Jeff Brohm, but they're going to get somebody. I feel pretty confident that that's the guy they're going to target number one overall. But I mean, hey, it wouldn't shock me to see Vince Tyra visit Clemson and maybe have a side conversation with Brent Venables or Tony Elliott.
What would you say, Nick, is a ballpark percentage on the fan base thinking that it's time for him to go?
I would say a solid 95-98%. Wow. There's always going to be some fans, and a lot of that stems from how he handled his first time around Louisville. So you know, some wounds don't heal all that easily, and if you're not going to back up what you're expected to do, then nobody's going to forget how you acted the first time around. You know, it's of fan base scorned is a dangerous thing to deal with. I do think that had he shown that he can put together a respectable staff or maybe show some signs of encouragement for the future with recruiting or just his words in general, then the fans wouldn't be so on, you know, pitchforky right now. But that's the situation that they're in. I mean, every time he comes out to a press conference, it's almost like he's making the situation worse with what he says or what he doesn't say. And I just think that the way he's handled this situation, a lot of people think that he's really earned a mulligan because quote unquote one bad year, but the body of work is started back after that Clemson loss, and they really haven't righted the ship yet. And again, I'll be honest with you, if Jeff Brohm wasn't right up the road, I don't know how quick the fans would be. I don't think that percentage would be as high. I think they would say, okay, let's wait it out. But given his come up in this right now and how well he's doing at Purdue, I mean, remember, Purdue was trash before he got there. I mean, they were a dump, and they have a winning mentality now. They're excited for football, and that was not very long ago that was the same situation in Louisville, and Louisville fans want it back, and they know that if they don't make the change now, then the chances of Jeff Brohm being around much longer are very slim, whether that's he gets a high-profile job in college football or an NFL job. I don't think he's going to be at Purdue very long. And I think that if Louisville is going to throw their hat in the ring, they got to do it now. And so that's why I think a lot of people are ready to push Bobby out. It's not just because they're fed up with him, but it's because they're fed up with him and the fact that they see somebody that they with a very familiar face that they feel can lead the program back to the level it was when they joined the ACC initially.
Maybe somewhat similar to Georgia and Kirby Smart.
Very true.
When Georgia caught wind that South Carolina was pursuing Kirby Smart, they went ahead and pushed Mark Richt out the door.
Yeah. It's like, now wins aren't good enough, buddy.
It's amazing. You're talking about that Florida State game 2 years ago, because that felt like a beginning. It's the third game of the year. I mean, it just had these reverberating effects. I was just talking to Andy Staples of SI a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, and he was talking about rushing to do the cover story at the last minute because it was just this monstrous development. But really, that was almost the end in a sense, because that was as high as they were going to get.
No, they are the football, college football's version of Icarus, man. They just flew a little too close to the sun for their own comfortability, and they just could not quite stick up there. I think they flew a little too high, a little too quickly, and it bit them. I do think that Louisville has the facilities, has the fan base, has the passion about college sports for them to get back on track. But I do think it's going to have to come with a coaching change.
Well, Nick, you've been very generous with your time, and I promise not to rip you to shreds after we hang up.
Hey, feel free, man.
No,
eye for an eye.
No, if we can kiss and make up, then maybe other people can follow the example.
No, you're good. And just for Saturday goes, if y'all can just, you know, maybe not beat us by 37, that would be nice. If not, I know, but I thought it was interesting that you had that little tongue-in-cheek tweet with the New York Times bestseller list about Louisville fans coming up. But I'm telling you, man, you may want to direct that to Clemson starters too, because maybe he's been a lot of time in the sun on the bench with their legs crossed. So,
well, I've actually already seen that in watching some of the Louisville tape this year. They look like they're more interested in things elsewhere than what's going on the field. So. Yeah, really bad body language. Not a good sign coming into this kind of matchup. But all right, thanks again, Nick, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. See you later.
All right, thank you to Nick Birch for being such a good sport about that. That was a really fun conversation. Thank you to title sponsor Parham Smith, an Arch and Hold law firm in downtown Greenville. Also, the Abernathy Boutique Hotel in Clemson, and Tandem Payment in Greenville. Thank you most of all to all of you for making this a part of your routine. We are almost at 40,000 downloads over, I guess, the better part of 2 months. So that's exciting. Really appreciate it. Next podcast scheduled to drop Monday morning. So stay tuned for that. Everybody have a great weekend and be safe. Cheers.